meeting in the Government Operations Committee is called to order. Today is Thursday, April 30th, 2020. This meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, allowing for remote meetings. It is being broadcast on the House Information Services website and YouTube page. The first item on the agenda is the roll call. Ms. Zomick, would you please call the roll?
Representative Freiberg.
Here.
Representative Sock.
Here.
Representative Quam.
Here.
Representative Bonner.
Here.
Representative Elkins.
Here.
Representative Gomez.
Here.
Representative Heinrich.
Here.
Representative Cagle.
Here.
Representative Lehman.
Here.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly. Representative Mason.
Okay, it says I'm muted.
Representative Mason.
We can hear you. We can hear you, Representative
Mason.
Still
saying launching.
We can hear you, Representative Mason. Can you say you're present?
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Nash.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
All present and accounted for.
Representative Tice.
Here.
Representative Vogel.
Here.
Representative West.
Here.
17 present. 16 present, sorry, with a quorum.
16 members are present. The first item on the agenda, the second item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the April 29th, 2020 meeting of the Government Operations Committee. The minutes should be in your packets and they are also online. So I will move approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Ms. Rudolph, this can be done by voice vote, correct?
Correct.
Okay. When seeing no discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is House File 3568. Representative Considine is here to discuss this. I will move House File 3568 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State of the Division on State Government Finance. Representative Considine, would you like to present your bill? And you are muted.
Not anymore. Yes, thank you. This is what was affectionately called by my CA as my moonshot for mental illness within the prisons. As we delved into the committee work this last year, excuse me for a second, I've got a cough. It's not COVID related. I tried to drink something just before we went down the wrong way. This is a planning commission to look at what is needed within our prison system and to come back with initial recommendations at the end of 2022 and a final recommendation at the end of 2025. What we discovered was that as mental health professionals have improved, excuse me, I'm really sorry, that there were a lot of gaps in what was being offered for treatment within the prisons. And we've pulled together a large group of stakeholders to examine this and, like I say, make recommendations. Hopefully in 2022, they will make some recommendations on what we call low-hanging fruit and things that the department can implement right away, and a more comprehensive look at the end of 2025. This bill was truly bipartisan. Everybody on the committee wanted to be a co-author. In fact, at one point, I was trying to hurry things along, and I didn't give a couple people the opportunity, and they came and said, hey, we want to be co-authors on this. So Representative O'Neill, Representative Poston, Representative Novotny are all co-authors, I believe, now. There was a fiscal note that came in yesterday or the day before, but my understanding is we're going to address that in ways and means. I stand open for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Considine. You don't have anybody specifically here to testify, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, this was, okay. I could say it was pretty bipartisan, and everybody kind of recognized the need for it within the committee.
Okay. Nobody is here to testify that I'm aware of. Are there any member discussions? I don't have anybody on the line at this point.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where was the motion? Where is this bill going to? It should go to government operations because we're the ones that will be coming out of our budget. Admin's going to oversee it.
You gave yourself a promotion. You're actually government finance representative.
State government finance, yeah.
And that is the motion. There is, as from my understanding, there is a fiscal note with a cost to the Department of Administration. So the motion was to send this to state government finance.
Great. That's what I wanted to make sure of.
Any additional member discussion? Representative Considine?
I'm fine. I'm just tapping the screen.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, seeing none, do you have any closing remarks, Representative Considine?
I think that this is just a first step. There are a number of issues that we were able to identify in this last year and a half. And there are, going forward, we need to look at how we handle corrections. It's getting absurdly expensive, for one thing. But we're also, I think, looking at a real shortage in how we're addressing people with needs. So I'm hoping that we can look at fetal alcohol syndrome, people with autism, besides just what I think people would think of when they talk about mental health issues. There are a number of other areas. So, I'm hoping going forward that we'll be able to address this, make our system get more bang for the buck, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3568 be recommended to pass and referred to the State Government Finance Division. With that, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Stock. Representative Sock.
Yes.
Representative Klum. Representative Klum.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Hi.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Kegel.
Aye.
Representative Lehman.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly. Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
16 ayes.
And there being 16 ayes and zero nays, your bill is on its way, Chair Considine. It's referred to the State Government Finance Division. Next item on the agenda is House File. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Next item on the agenda is House File 3976. Representative Dean, I will move that House File 3976 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Would you like to present your bill, Chair Dean?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3976 is the Minnesota Felony Murder Task Force bill. What this will do is it'll create a task force to look at Minnesota's felony murder laws, oftentimes referred to as aiding and abetting. Minnesota has one of the strictest laws in the country, and we believe it's time that we put together a task force to actually begin to look at that. The task force, I believe, is comprised of 12 individuals, and they'll be looking at the data. They'll be looking at sort of federal case law, what other states are doing relative to this. I could go on and talk for another 10 minutes, but I'm sure you don't want to hear that. I actually have two testifiers that I'd like to speak to this. The first one, I believe, is going to be Tony Cater, who is with the Felony Murder Law Reform Group, and she can speak to it. I told them to try to keep their comments within about 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Cater. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Tony Cater, and I'm here to share with you. I'll keep this as short as I can, but I want to hear you guys to hear the story because I think it will impact and help you going forward and all of us going forward. I'm here to share with you the story of our journey into the felony murder laws in Minnesota. My daughter's name is Megan Cater. She is, has always been, a kind person who loves to care for others. She is smart, funny, and a wonderful daughter. A few years ago, at the age of 19, she was suffering from substance abuse, self-medicating a trauma we did not know had happened. And her and her friend Brianna were spending a lot of time together in the thralls of substance abuse. Megan and Brianna had been at their friend and drug dealer's house with his girlfriend, and Brianna's prescription of anti-seizure antidepressants were stolen. When Brianna's request to have the medication returned went turned down and the drug dealer started selling her medication on social media, Brianna and Megan decided to go and get it back. During this time, they were contacted by the ex-roommate of this young man, and he shared with Megan that he had several items stolen from the same person, and he was going back that evening to retrieve the items with a friend. They decided to meet up and go together. Then one of the young men decided to bring another friend, and he brought his uncle. The girls ended up in the back stairwell of an apartment building with two men they did not know. When the girls saw them pull their hoods up and started putting on rubber gloves, they said they wanted to back out. They were told with gun drawn, if they didn't get them in the apartment, they would die. They had no choice but to go through with the burglary. These two men beat the young drug dealer, and one of the men made the horrific decision to kill him. When we found out what had happened, we were devastated. But nothing would prepare us for what was about to happen. You see, we thought they would be charged with the crimes they committed. We had no idea there was such a thing as a felony murder law. We had no idea that if one person makes a horrific and awful decision to kill someone, that anyone involved in a different felony would be charged as if they pulled the trigger. When all six people involved were charged with first-degree murder, our ability to breathe seemed to stop. How could the two young men who were in the car outside be charged with first-degree murder? How could Megan and Brianna, who had been victims of gun violence themselves, made to lie on the floor in the apartment building as they watched this young man beaten and killed, be charged with first-degree murder? How was it possible that these two young women who had no criminal history and had not hurt anyone, but were charged the same as the man who chose to beat and kill the victim? Brianna and Megan didn't kill anyone. They didn't intend for anyone to be killed. They now suffer from PTSD from witnessing someone they cared about beaten and killed. Yet they were charged and facing mandatory life without parole if they took it to trial. When we found out the first plea deal went to the shooter, we couldn't understand what was happening. Our attorney shared with us that this, in their experience, this was typical. Yes, the person who in fact beat and shot this young man was given the first plea deal. Megan and Brianna, as well as the other two young men, also took plea deals. What were their options? Based on the law and its breadth and width and the false equivalencies it allows, they were forced to take a plea deal for a murder they did not commit. They were also sentenced to 13 and a half years in prison. Once they were placed at Shakopee, we quickly became aware of the many women currently and formerly at Shakopee Women's Prison who have similar stories. Women who were not at the scene of the crime when it happened, women who were outside when the murder happened, who played peripheral roles at best when it happened, and yet they were charged with the murder of someone else committed. We know of multiple women who were sentenced to life without parole, and for some, the killer in their cases were given plea deals, and they'll be out in as short as 26 years. And yet these women were sentenced to death by incarceration and were sentenced to life without parole. They will die at Shakopee Women's Prison. Our experience and knowledge has been mostly about the women, but each day it seems I hear another new story of a young man sentenced under felony murder law, young men with no criminal history, no intention to kill anyone, and did not do so. I don't want to give you guys the wrong impression. I am not saying any of these people didn't make really bad choices, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be held accountable for their choices. And in no way am I denying or minimizing the trauma of the victims and their families. It is without saying that these people are devastated by these tragic events. But the lack of proportionality in these laws, charges, and sentences seems absurd. The task force will bring together all stakeholders, from those of us whose loved ones are sentenced under these laws, to victim advocate organizations, to the same roundtable with those who use the laws and see their effect in their daily job. We believe together at one table, we can review their laws, the statistics, the use, outcomes, and discover if Minnesota laws as written offer the best possible use for a safer Minnesota. We, as the families of those serving excessively long sentences for crimes that someone else committed, plead with you for your support for this task force and allow this group to figure out if these long sentences and overcharging are really the best option. My daughter, Brianna, and many of the young women at Shakopee under felony murder law are taking college classes, mentoring other women, being productive and working hard. I have received many letters from women sharing with me the positive role that my young daughter has played in their life, the influence for good she has done for those around her. I can tell you with all certainty, Minnesota is not safer with Megan in prison for 10 years. Minnesota is not safer with Brianna, nor Maureen, or Antoinette, or Carol, or Don. I could go on, but I won't. It is time Minnesota take a look at these laws. And as the elected officials who represent our fine state, I ask you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your story, Ms. Cater. Appreciate you being here. I have Perry Moriarty here to testify.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Freiberg. Can everyone hear me?
Yes. Okay. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Perry Moriarty. I am a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. I teach criminal law, juvenile justice, and I co-direct the Child Advocacy and Juvenile Justice Clinic. Among other things, our clinic represents individuals serving life without parole and life in prison for offenses they committed as children. And we represent several clients who have been impacted or serving long sentences by the laws that we are discussing today. I'm here to testify in support of HF 3976. Which, as you know, establishes a bipartisan and diverse task force of impacted persons, stakeholders, experts, and others with relevant knowledge to study Minnesota's felony murder and aiding and abetting laws and provide recommendations to the Minnesota legislature about potential amendments that would both preserve public safety and promote equity and fairness. I will be as brief as I possibly can. I will cover initially the genesis and current state of felony murder in the United States, followed by Minnesota's felony murder and aiding and abetting laws and how they compare with other states. And finally, just a couple of words on the benefits of a task force. First, what is felony murder? What is the felony murder rule and how did it come to be? Felony murder is an old English common law doctrine that developed to allow those whose conduct brought about an unintended death in the commission or attempted commission of a felony to be found guilty of murder by imputing malice where there was no actual intent to kill. Originally, under English law, it was thought that a killing had to occur during a felony, and that killing must have caused a death. That has changed markedly over time. Felony murder became part of U.S. law in the 18th century and was codified over time in every state in the country. But despite its prevalence in the United States, felony murder remains, to quote the Minnesota Supreme Court, an anomaly in the law of homicide. With the exception of involuntary manslaughter, it is the only form of homicide that does not require proof of a specific mental state. Thus, individuals like Megan and Brianna can be held liable for murder even if they did not intend to do anything violent at all, and subjected to sentences that far exceeds their culpability. Because of this inherent disproportionality, England actually abolished felony murder as a doctrine in 1957. And as of today, every single common law country, England, Ireland, Canada, Australia, and India, every common law country but the United States has abolished the doctrine. Increasingly, though, U.S. states are now doing just what this bill proposes, setting up commissions to review and reform their felony murder laws. Felony murder, as a rule, has now been abolished in Ohio, Hawaii, Kentucky, Michigan, and Massachusetts, and Arkansas, California, Connecticut, Delaware, Maine, New Jersey, New York, North Dakota, Oregon, and Washington limit the felony murder rule to the actual perpetrators of the homicide. So how do Minnesota's felony murder and aiding and abetting laws compare with other states' laws? Relative to other states, Minnesota currently has an especially broad felony murder rule in at least three respects. First, it is possible in Minnesota to be charged with and convicted of first-degree murder without ever intending to kill another person. This is because a defendant can be charged with aiding and abetting the intentional killing of another person while committing or attempting to commit a requisite felony, even a very serious property crime offense, under the two statutes that are at issue in this task force. Second, it is possible to be charged with and convicted of second-degree murder under 609.192 in Minnesota if you commit an assault that results in death, even if the initial assault was nothing more than a punch and you had no desire to inflict serious injury, let alone death. This is because Minnesota does not recognize something called the merger doctrine. Third, as I just indicated, it is possible for a misdemeanor assault, something very low level, to become a felony assault and therefore a predicate for second degree murder based on the extent of injury, even if there was no intent to cause any injury. Taken together, these provisions of Minnesota law allow for a more expansive form of criminal liability for otherwise unintentional deaths than many other states. Indeed, my colleague Richard Fraze, who has been teaching criminal law at the University of Minnesota for 40 years, has said that he is not aware of any other state that has such a broad rule. Finally, why a task force? Because we currently lack data on the extent to which this law has been utilized, the extent to which people are serving very lengthy sentences for offenses that involve no actual act or intent of violence, because this area of the law is incredibly dense and complicated, and mostly, most importantly, because there is so much at stake here for Megan and Brianna, but also for the victims of offenses like this and their families. A bipartisan task force that can ensure recommendations that not only preserve public safety, but are also fair and proportionate is a critical next step in reforming these laws. Thank you very much for letting me speak with you.
Thank you, Professor Moriarty. I don't have anyone else who has signed up to testify. Is there any member discussion to this bill? Okay. I guess seeing none, Representative Dean, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank the testifiers for really laying out what this is about. This is about some of Minnesota's laws, but it's also about people and people who have gotten caught up in our system, and their penalties have far exceeded what I would contend is their actions or their behavior was at the time these impacts happened. You know, this is something that, you know, I think is a beginning. I think the task force will really look deep in what we're doing in our state and then also look at our state relative to other states and, you know, other countries and what we're doing relative to this. And I think this is really one of those opportunities where we can do something that's good. And as a result of the task force, hopefully we can align our laws in a way that's reasonable to the impact that an individual may have had on a particular offense. So I just want to thank you guys for your time, and I hope that members support moving this bill forward so we can try to get this in place before the end of this year.
Thank you, Representative Dean. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 3976 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Sock.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Bonner. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Roman.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly. Representative Mason. Representative Mason.
Let me, aye. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Thank okay. You.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
16 ayes, Chair.
There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion is approved and the bill is going to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Representative Dean. That concludes our agenda. Our next meeting will be tomorrow. That's Friday, May 1st, 12:45 p.m. We will likely, I think the plan at this point, it hasn't been finalized, but it seems likely that we will be meeting next Tuesday, I think at our normal committee time, which is 9:45 a.m. But wait till you should receive an email most likely today about that. So just watch out for that. Any questions before we adjourn? Okay, seeing none, this committee is adjourned.